This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Living free.
Thanks to Resident Frequency Radio for another great show, playing tracks and chatting with Collingwood artists. Welcome to Living Free, a one-hour show in which we highlight one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drugs, alcohol, gambling and other food addictions. Our guests share their recovery story and highlight that shared experience saves lives. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on the AM dial or 3CR on digital radio or maybe even live streaming on 3cr.org.au. My name's Michael and I'm joined in the studio today by my guest, Hayley. Welcome.
Hi, Michael.
Good to have you here.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So we've asked Hayley today to come and share her experience of recovery from alcoholism with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous. And before we do that, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Now, before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussions of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm and family violence, so please practice self-care and the care of others whilst listening. Welcome. So, we'd like to start the show by asking our guests to tell us a little bit about their upbringing, about their childhood. So, what was it like growing up as Hayley?
It was a good life. I've had a relatively lovely childhood. I am the youngest of three daughters, and I'm the youngest by a fair whack. There's 11 and 12 years difference between myself and my sisters, so there's a 13-month gap between them and a fairly large gap between them and myself. So I feel like a bit of an afterthought some of the time.
But obviously didn't like the older ones and went, we can do better.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely. So, I felt like a bit of a square peg in a round hole. I sort of felt a bit left out a lot of the time. My sisters would always be going off and doing things together, and I'd be left at home with my parents or mum a lot of the time. I grew up with dad working on the oil rigs, so he would be away a week and home a week. You could certainly guarantee every time dad was away, the girls would play up. There were parties being thrown in the house whilst they were meant to be babysitting me and mum being out, and mum would come home to cigarette burns on the floor. So I grew up very differently to them. As I got older, I certainly didn't throw parties in the house.
Yep.
I had a very different upbringing to my sisters. By the time I came along, Dad wanted to start going back to church. So I was, but he started off in the Anglican church, and I was always dragged along almost kicking and screaming to Sunday school every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the years, he wanted to go back to his Catholic faith. So I've been brought up Catholic and went to Catholic schools. Had that upbringing. I was also a very, very spoiled child. So by the time I came along, my parents were a lot better off. Dad had a very high-paying job, and, so I got the best of everything. Got the music lessons, the piano lessons, singing lessons, horse riding lessons, the horse, the dance lessons and theatre.
Wow, you ticked all the boxes that were required for a good childhood.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I was a very, very lucky girl, and I appreciate that. I've got a big love of music, and that was always nurtured ever since I was, a toddler. Grew up with my father playing music, playing guitar, and he taught me a lot. And these days, you know, I'm a singer, I'm a performer. I went to uni. I was the first person in my family to actually finish a higher education. My parents sort of dropped out of school in early forms, and my sisters dropped out when they were in their HSC and went to business college. Yep. So for me, I was always really trying to aim high and make my parents proud by pursuing the study that I did.
Yeah. So what was your friendship? What were your friendship groups like? If your siblings are a little bit older, so you're not necessarily hanging out with them, what about friendship groups did you make friends easily?
No, not really. I was a very shy child. I struggled with friendships at school. There were things that happened to me in early childhood, and it made it very difficult for me to trust, I guess.
Yep.
I didn't fit in at school. I didn't fit in anywhere, really. Yep. I was a very, very lonely child and always felt alone and bullied. And, I went to three primary schools and three high schools, and the problem followed me everywhere. So I wonder who the problem was.
school can be like that, can't it? It's difficult to find your tribe. And if you're moving around and struggle to find a platform to build friendships from, it's difficult. A lot of those friendships are already formed by other people together, and you're sort of on the outside a bit, I guess.
Yeah, my friendship groups were always, I'd just have a little friend here and there. I was never in a big group. It's only since coming into AA that these days I've got an amazing network of people. It's amazing what the fellowship brings into your life. And I've actually learned to trust women. Shocking. I did not like girls growing up. Yep. So I always tended to stick to the boys. As you get older, with that comes their own set of problems.
You bet.
I'm really grateful to, have an amazing network that I do these days. I've managed to start growing up, actually.
Shocking. don't tell anyone.
Took a while.
What was your life looking like when you started drinking? Like drinking, not just drinking, sipping drinks, but when you decided that, hey, this is something that I not necessarily enjoy doing, but something I'm going to keep doing.
So I noticed that I started to have a problem when I had my eldest daughter.
So you weren't in your teen years now?
No, I wasn't in my teen years. I was 22, and I had her whilst I was still living at home, and then when I moved out, she was 18 months, and I found myself drinking wine at 7 o'clock in the morning some mornings.
Perfect time to drink. Ah,
oh, isn't it just? Yeah, it's 12 o'clock somewhere, isn't it?
I think my experience with that is that it's really difficult to get the first one in. Like to get the first one down that early in the morning is a struggle. But once it's in there, the first one, my body rejects it. That was my experience of wine in the morning was, put it in, my body's going, no! And then wanting to heave it back up or not get it down my throat. Swallowing that first one was difficult. But after it's in there, that was actually the real problem. My body's telling me, no. And then you get the first one and it goes, got to have more.
Oh, absolutely. I can absolutely relate to that. The same struggles, years down the track when the drinking was really bad and I'd be getting up searching madly for that bottle that I'd stashed somewhere the night before and desperately trying to get it down and the body's physically rejecting it, standing over the toilet, holding a bottle of wine, trying to sink that down and,
Social drinking in the toilet is always a good look, isn't it?
Party of one.
Cool. Okay. I interrupted you've started drinking after your daughter's 18 months to or you sort of that started to become problematic? Or?
It was, and I really took note of it. And then I stopped. I met my husband. He wasn't a drinker. And I thought, perfect, you know, that means that I don't drink. But, you know, down over the years, I did start, you know, drinking occasionally. But anytime I did drink, there was always issues. You know, I was very emotional, drunk.
Mm.
And I think it really, the drinking really kicked off when I was about 27 and I was pregnant with my third child, my son, and I was binge drinking. You know, I was struggling with postnatal depression from my previous daughter, my second daughter, and I fell pregnant with my son at six, you know, when she was 6 months, and I was really, really struggling. And you know, I stopped. I didn't do it too many times, but there were major arguments and major events that actually happened with my drinking. It just really escalated.
And but it wasn't a daily event.
No, it was once every couple of months, and you know, once my son was born, he was 6 weeks prem. You know, that came, you know, that was a really stressful time, and I started drinking again. And you know, I had a suicide attempt when he was 1 month, a couple of months, and I lost custody of my eldest daughter at that point. And then a few months later, I went out with some girlfriends on, you know, making a promise that I would not drink that night.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I ended up sneaking drinks at the bar and got absolutely blind, and threw up in the back of the car and on the way home. And they promptly threw me out at a petrol station in Box Hill and told my husband to come and get me. And the next day, my mother and father-in-law sat me down and said, "Hayley, we really think you've got a problem. You know, you need help." And I agreed that I did. And my father-in-law took me to my first AA meeting.
When was that?
Sorry?
When was that?
So that was January 2011.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That was my first introduction to AA. And, you know, started going to regular and frequent meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And I stuck around for a few months, but I didn't hear back then what I know now.
Yeah.
You know, so the meetings that I was going to weren't really recovery meetings. They were just people getting up, sharing their story, and, you know, a lot of crashing and bashing and jails and institutions and loss of licenses. And I thought, well, I'm not that bad.
Cool.
You know. So I honestly didn't think I qualified. I identified. But I thought, no, I'm better than that. You know, I'm not as bad as you guys. Thanks for the information. I left.
That's a really good time to take a break. Listening to Living Free on 3CR Community Radio. We would encourage our listeners to become regular donors to 3CR. By becoming a regular donor, your ongoing support ensures that we can continue to provide a platform for community issues and struggles. Jump online and go to 3cr.org.au to become a regular donor, or call the station during business hours on 94198377. Today I'm talking to Hayley about alcoholism and her recovery through Alcoholics Anonymous. Before the break, you gave us some insight into your introduction to alcohol and when it started to get problematic, and, you know, after the birth of your children, and maybe we'll just have a look at what that started to look like. You're in your late 20s or mid to late 20s. So 2011, you were introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you said you didn't find your tribe, but you identified with the problem, sort of. So what happened next?
So I stayed around for a couple of months, but then thought, no, thanks for the information. I can do this. I'm really not that bad. So, but I did stay sober for nearly 2 years, and then I had my fourth child. And you know, started to just drink on the odd occasion with my husband, and you know, it wasn't problematic. You know, I could sometimes, he would out drink me on lolly drinks, and I honestly didn't think I was that bad. But then it, you know, it progressed over to wine, and you know, then I was finding myself, you know, pouring glasses for us both, but I'm pouring a glass for me, throwing that down, and then pouring another glass. So because the allergy was there. You know, I as soon as alcohol touched my lips, I wanted more.
Yeah.
And
you might actually visit that, because the idea, Alcoholics Anonymous talk about the fact that there's a, we suffer from this physical allergy, or this physical thing that makes us different. And the word allergy is because we have a different reaction, an abnormal reaction, and that it describes that when I put it in my body, I crave another one. And it's not the way that normal people drink. They don't have that experience. That you know, we were also talking during the break that we, you know, we might say that you know, when we're talking about alcoholics, that the vision of alcoholics is people who are drinking every day, but really it's just about what it is when I drink, I can't control how much I have, and then but it doesn't matter if it's I have 2 weeks between a drink or whatever. I just can't control how much I have. And then when I make a decision that I'm not going to drink, I drink. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous calls alcoholism, or defines as alcoholism, this inability to stop once I start, and this inability to keep a promise to me or to other people once I make a decision that I'm not going to do it, this insanity that, you know, I only pick up the first drink when I'm sober, even though I know that when I drink it's going to get out of control. So yeah, so you were experiencing that phenomenon of craving, that idea that, you know, you're putting in your body and you're having to have more and more and more.
Absolutely. It's like this switch that gets flicked and you can't turn it off. You know, you just need to put more and more alcohol into your body. It's a very, very strange but familiar sensation, you know. Yeah.
Especially when like two or three is enough, like you go, that feeling at two or three drinks drunk is amazing feeling. And if I could maintain just being two or three, the world would be a different place.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
But the problem is that I overshoot the mark every time, not knowing that I'm suffering from this craving for more.
Absolutely. And for me, I can go from being stone cold sober to complete blackout. You know, where I have absolutely no memory. You know, there's no happy medium in between of just that nice feeling of being happy, so to speak, or tipsy. I go from sober to complete drunk, and unfortunately, the allergies is so rife in me that I'm not a nice person when I'm intoxicated.
Our behaviour, and they talk about, you know, Jekyll and Hyde or whatever, you know, this personality
Absolutely.
Change that comes on, that we're not the person people we necessarily would be when we're sober.
Absolutely. I really identify with the Jekyll and Hyde, you know, and can turn, unfortunately, quite nasty. For me, I think, you know, it it unleashes all of that hurt and resentment that I've pushed down so far, and it'll all come flying out in the wrong way.
Yep.
And I don't deal with it very well, and it causes, you know, a lot of harm and a lot of pain. And as you know, you and I know that this is a progressive disease, and you know, so even though it started out as well relatively normal when I was younger, it progressed to, you know, that binge drinking, and you know, and eventually it did get to the point where there were times where I was drinking daily.
Yep.
And you know, almost around the clock, you know, and I. You know, we know that alcoholism is what we call the great remover.
Yeah.
It's a family disease, and it removes a lot from our lives. I've lost children, I've lost family, I've lost friends, friendships, jobs. You know, through my behaviour, from drinking. And, you know, you fall into the grips of alcoholism and you just can't stop. It feels like there's no way of coming back. I've gone into rehabs. You know, I went into my first rehab in 2016, and after my husband and our parents held an intervention, and I agreed, you know, I have a problem with alcohol. I went into a 28-day rehab, but I was so convinced that my reason for drinking was my marriage falling apart at the time. And I remember being in rehab, and I heard what they said was, "Hayley, you don't have a drinking problem. You've got a husband problem." And what they actually said was, "Hayley, you don't have a husband problem. You've got a drinking problem."
So it's a great disconnector, isn't it? So we fear disconnection from others, and then what happens is through our drinking is we disconnect ourselves from others, and then we feel lonely and we feel isolated, and then I need to drink.
Absolutely.
I create the environment that I'm so fearful of having. You know, I'm so fearful of what other people think, but then my behaviour gives me reason to be fearful what other people think, because I'm acting in ways that are against my own moral code, and I separate myself. And there, other people can see it, and I'm sitting there pointing the finger at other people about the way they're treating me.
Yes, you know, and it was, you know, I was like, well, you'd drink too if you had the problems that I've got. And, you know, I was terrified of coming home out of that rehab because I didn't want to relapse. And, you know, when I did come home, 3 days later, I did relapse. And 2 days after that, I left my husband. You know, I thought, no, this, you know, I'm drinking because of the marriage. But unfortunately, it went from bad to worse. And with that came, you know, a very long custody battle over the next few years, and I was just, even though I was coming to meetings and things like that, at the time I didn't really have a sponsor that could sponsor, but I didn't. We only know what we know.
Yep.
And it wasn't until 2020 that I actually finally got sober. Again, finding myself in yet another toxic relationship, and you know,
so I think that's about the time we met.
Yes. And you know, things were starting to come back though. I moved out. I had a house of my own. I had my job. I had my kids, or my younger three, back in my life, and things were great. I was in AA pretty much 24/7. COVID for me was a real blessing. I still had a job. I had, you know, AA on Zoom. I had AA recovery podcasts in my ears all the time, and I was well immersed in the fellowship. And
You'll bring your kids to meetings when in 2021.
Absolutely, you know, and they could see how well this worked. You know, this program worked for me. I remember I was having a bad afternoon one day, and my son said to me, "Mom, I think you need a meeting."
Yep.
Because they know how much better I run when I've done a meeting or when I'm engaged in fellowship.
Yep.
And working the AA program. So
okay, so let's talk about the insanity that happens after that. So you're in AA, you're being sponsored, you're doing the program itself, you have a daily routine, you've got some stuff. It's not my job to tell your story, but you've got
but
you're not sober 6 years, so
No, I'm definitely not. Unfortunately, relapsed after a very traumatic event. But you and I both know that the relapse happens well before we pick up that drink. And looking back, I can see I was starting to pull away a little bit. You know, I wasn't being as fully engaged. You know, we're in lockdown, so we're doing Zoom meetings, and I was doing them with the camera off and becoming very distracted and not really engaging in hearing the message.
Yep.
And, you know, I was starting to, you know, drop off the gratitude lists, the little routines that I was doing that help us stay sober.
Yep.
Or help me stay sober. And unfortunately, I had a relapse. And over the next few years, it's been a real battle to get back on track.
Yep.
And I would get time up. And then I'd, you know, over a few months and I'd fall over, or a month up and I'd fall over. And part of my story is that, you know, I have mental health issues as well.
Yep.
And it wasn't until last year that I was finally diagnosed, you know, officially, I'm happy to say it, bipolar.
Mm.
And now that I'm medicated, you know, I'm so much better, and that was half my problem.
Yeah.
Was needing that outside help. You know, AA can only do so much. AA helps me with my my alcoholism.
Yeah.
I need to treat my alcoholism, but I also needed to treat my mental health.
Yeah.
And
AA gives us some practical things to do.
Mm.
It's a behaviour change program, and the fact that we're driven by the fact that drinking is going to kill us, that we're going to make a decision to change the way we behave. Mm. And then our thinking and our stuff will come with that. Rather than thinking our way into better behaviour, we're going to behave our way into better thinking. But if you've got this undiagnosed other stuff going on, then, you know, and you're manic and you've got this and that happening and your brain's all over the shop, it's very difficult for it to be dragged along by the actions that we're taking, and the motivation to keep the actions can be really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and unfortunately, because of my relapsing, you know, I've harmed a lot of people in AA. You know, people have had to step away because it was getting too much, and I've had many sponsors pull away because they're like, oh no, you're too crazy, can't deal with you. And today I have an amazing sponsor, and you know, he gets me. We're very, very similar. He knows how messy I am, or you know, he's seen how messy I can be. For the, you know, he was watching in the background for the last however many years.
It's not that you've flown a long way from the coop, because all the people that have been your sponsor since then, I've known.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and we actually might take a break and we will come back. It's, you know, we've got a bit of time, and I really want to talk to you about and listen to you talk about what you're doing now that that makes life doable.
Sure.
And we'll play some music.
Is drinking costing you more than money? Alcoholics Anonymous provides a free and anonymous recovery service to anyone who wants to call it quits. Join millions of other alcoholics worldwide and take your first brave steps toward a new beginning. There are thousands of AA meetings happening every week across Australia. If you'd like to find your closest meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or have any questions regarding this tried and tested treatment for alcoholism, call 1300 AA, that's 1300 22 22 22, or visit aa.org.au. This community service announcement is sponsored by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Free on 3CR People Powered Radio. If you'd like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform, or just search for 3CR Living Free and check out our website. I'd also like to shout out to someone who contacted us after the show last week when I was chatting to Dylan, to Michael in Northcote, and thanks very much for listening. Today I'm talking with Hayley about alcoholism and her recovery with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous. So let's talk about the good stuff. Let's talk about what's happening now. At some stage, you know, say less than a year ago, you made a decision that this was it.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm.
So what does life look like at the absolute last drink, for you?
It was horrendous. I had lost everything. I haven't worked for a long time. No children, no job, no friends. Almost, you know. Just had the quiet few, and pretty rock bottom. But from there, you know, the only way is up, and the rock bottom is when we choose to stop digging, really. So I set the shovel down, and actually my sponsor, who wasn't my sponsor at the time, but I was still doing gratitude lists that we like to send out, and he was starting to read between the lines, and he said, how are things with your sponsor? And I said, well, I don't have one. And he said, give me a call. And I haven't looked back, you know. So I have a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor, because I am in regular contact with him. I've spoken to him nearly every single day for the last 9.5 months. And, I engage with him on a very regular basis.
You're keeping him sober.
Absolutely.
The role of the sponsor is to keep the sponsor sober by giving them the opportunity to have some words come out of their mouth that they're not doing, and going, oh, I really should take that advice, and maybe it'll work for me too. Yeah. So, but you don't know that that's your job, but that's definitely the job of the sponsee. They don't know they're signing up for that. So that's cool. So, yeah, he's on the other end of the phone when he needs to be.
He is. He is always. And we've got the sort of relationship that I can tell him absolutely anything. And I think, you know, that's part of our problem is, you know, we call this an honesty program. You know, we have to be honest because we're only as sick as our secrets. And I was finding myself in the past in fear of telling sponsors certain things that I'd done, and you know, when you keep those parts of your life secret, that's where we start to, you know, we fall over, and we're so much closer to picking up a drink because we end up drinking on it. Well, I did anyway. Whereas these days, I have absolutely no fear of what I can speak to my sponsor about. He's always incredibly understanding. He's always armed with, you know, some tidbit to tell me, you know, a little gold nugget to help me through. You know, some days I can still be messy, still have messy thinking, but I don't need to drink on it today. And I was speaking to him this morning. He said, geez, you sound really well. You know, like you're actually traveling well for a while. And it's nice, it's peaceful, even though, you know, does my life look like how I want it to? No, it doesn't. Still don't have my family back in my life or my children, but that's okay. I sit in acceptance of that most days. I know that, or I trust that those things will come back. I'm surprised I'm running as well as I am today because it's actually my eldest daughter's birthday. Mm-hmm. And around this time of year, I always get very emotional, but I have a program to lean into. I have a higher power. I have a God that I trust and have faith in, and faith helps me through.
Yeah, I guess that's the AA program. It looks like, or AA looks like a not drinking club. Like that we all hang out and we won't drink together. Mm. And actually the chances are that most of the people in AA I wouldn't have drank with anyway. But the actual AA program itself is a removal of blockages to that, whatever that power is, and the blockage is me and the way I run my life and the way the fears that drive me to do that and the way, you know, the fear of what other people think. And I just have this great fear of what other people are going to think if they really knew me. They wouldn't like me, or they'll judge me. And it's because I'm so judgmental. The whole thing is that I just need to feel connection. If the alcohol's the great remover and it actually separates me from everybody, then the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is about reconnecting with those around me in a useful way. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not just going to be a taker. So what's your day-to-day stuff look like in maintaining your sobriety?
When I do it well, I get up, I meditate, I pray, have that connection first thing.
What do you pray for?
What do I pray? I pray for others. Yep. I pray for my sobriety. on a daily basis. And, you know, that so, you know, for God to keep me sober so that I am of use to others.
Mm.
And, you know, that my family gets the daughter, the mother, the sister back that they deserve, you know, that my friends have the friend that they deserve.
It's sort of really different from religion. We're not sitting there praying for ourselves.
No.
We're sitting there, what we're doing is we're praying. We're not praying to get stuff. We're praying to have the ability to do stuff or to give stuff of ourselves and have the power to carry out the actions or the intentions that we have. You know, that's the way that I'm shown how to pray.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm not sitting there just asking for help. What I'm doing is I'm going, okay, show me ways that I can be useful so I stop thinking about me.
Yeah, we're very selfish creatures as alcoholics. but it's taught me to get out of self well and truly.
So you've got, you know, regular meetings you're doing, or?
Yes, I have a sponsorship family meeting that I do. That's on a Sunday morning. It's now moved to Wednesday night. So last night I had a double dose of sponsorship family.
That'd kill me.
Had some big book and then step meeting with our sponsorship family. I have a home group.
Is somewhere that you're going to show up every week and the people expect you to be there, and it gives us opportunities to be consistent. So like our lack of consistency in our lives is a real problem, but we show up and just to be, as I said, reliable and consistent is a spiritual action. And I didn't know that. there's an expectation. So, but you know, I get to show up. And so that's cool. We have a home group, and that's
wonderful. I get to be of service to others these days instead of isolating and sitting by myself. I pick up service positions at meetings.
What's that look like? What's a service position?
Service position, so anywhere from being a greeter, which is, I love being a greeter. I get to speak to everyone that comes through the doors and what, you know.
Most important job in the group.
Absolutely, you know, be that real friendly face, especially for people who are new coming in and, you know, are unsure what they're sort of walking into. But
there's nothing better than going to your second meeting and the person at the door and remembers your name. You go there for the second week in a row and the person,
how do you know me?
You go, oh my God, I asked you last week. And you go, oh, I haven't been asked to welcome back like anywhere for a long time at the end of my drinking. So, yeah, so the greeter's job is really important. What else is there?
So there is literature. So we have literature, you know, books that you can buy on recovery, one of them being our beautiful big book that is called Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yep.
That was written back in the 1930s.
Yeah, and that's a book that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was named after, the book, and the book was, you know, put together by the first 100 people who got sober, and it's a textbook. Describes the program, how we're going to do the program. It starts with some identification at the start of the book and describes the problem, and then it describes the actions we're going to take that are going to clear up our past and make us useful moving forward, and that's the whole premise of the book. And I did joke about it last week that we called it a big book because it's a big book and we're not very imaginative, but that's the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous is a book, and it's, well, you know, anybody can get their hands on it if you think you've got a drinking problem, you know. So. So it's literature, and there's lots of pamphlets about stuff, you know, things like to encourage people, like if they're on medication, to, you know, don't listen to other dickheads who are telling you not to take medication because we're not doctors. And no. We'd go, you know, we know nothing. But there's pamphlets about all this stuff, you know, finding a sponsor. It's a pamphlet about, hey, these are the sort of things you might want to look for in a sponsor. It's the sort of things you can just pick up some information about anything. Is AA for you? You know, there's 44 questions that you might want to answer to you for yourself to say, hey, do I belong here? Maybe I don't. You know, who knows?
Yes, any question you've got, I think any one of those pamphlets can answer,
yeah.
You know, and I enjoy being, you know, in these service positions because it gets me talking to people and meeting new people, especially newcomers. So, you know, and I love that AA is so self-supporting, like, it's definitely not a cult.
Like Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't accept money from anywhere. Like, we don't take funding from anywhere outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're self-supporting by the the contribution of its own members, and it doesn't accept funding or anything. So they're not beholden to anybody, not the people that they rent their rooms from. You know, they pay rent to rent rooms, and the people put in, and we pass a basket at the end of the meeting. And, you know, if people choose to put in, that's great. And if they don't, that's cool too. Mm-hmm. And there's no rules. I love Alcoholics Anonymous for the fact that there are no rules, if you're hanging around long enough, you'll sort of jump on board with the stuff that's going. We're going to wrap it up in a minute. So what would you say is that, you know, if what's your lasting impression that what's it look like now that that's bringing you joy?
Probably the fact that I am now able to give back, and I'm starting to work with newcomers and put my hand up to be a sponsor.
Yep.
You know, things like you asking me to come on here and share my story, to let others know that they're not alone, and my story, my journey is my journey, and it's very different to others who've walked through the doors of AA and stayed sober. Yep. You know, that's not my story. But I'm not embarrassed by that today. You know, I've had to go along the journey that I have to get to where I am today.
Yep.
And I'm now at a point where I, you know, hopefully my family can start to come back into my life. You know, I work a very solid program. I've started the beauty of this recovery. It's been a slow burn. It has been an absolute baptism of fire. Every, you know, hurdle that I've come across, I've managed to get over, and they've been quite big. But the biggest thing that I've really enjoyed is the fact that I've started to make amends. And I had someone on my list that I honestly never thought that I would make amends to this person.
Mm-hmm.
I was so resentful at them, and it's an ex-partner. And I sat down and made amends with him late last year. And, you know, today we sit on the phone for hours talking, like, that just the turnaround, you know, because of my own psychic change. I'm not the person I used to be, you know, as an alcoholic. And I'm finding absolute beauty in that, and my music, and very, very grateful sober alcoholic today.
Awesome. That's all the time we've got for today. And I'd like to thank Hayley for coming into the 3CR studios and sharing her experience with Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, you're welcome. I hope that you'll be able to join us next week when Anne will be speaking with somebody regarding their recovery. So coming up next, we've got Bullamwah, The Spirit of Wah, hosted by Uncle Talcum Choco Edwards. Join Uncle Choco in The Spirit of Wah on a journey of belonging and movement through sing-alongs and yarns. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.